And now, Jalen and Jacoby.
We're the Pop Patrol. Head to the dirt.
Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Worry about my posse getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo TB, pop the trunk.
Cause we make a pop the trunk and hit the switch.
Now act stupid, I'll pop the trunk. Now give me your ba-boom.
Very special day today on Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen Rose is out, but we have the honor, privileged to be blessed with co-host Nick Friedel. Nick, welcome to Jalen and Jacoby, your very first maiden voyage here on this vessel. Known as Jalen and Jacoby. How you doing?
Jacoby, I'm great, man. I appreciate you having me. It's going to be a blast.
It's great. I saw you preparing with Harlan earlier. Reggie is on the ones and twos here. We've also got the rest of the crew, and we're going to get going. So my first question for you, I'm a little nervous about this. Friedel or Friedel?
Friedel. Friedel.
Friedel. Okay, yeah. Friedel. Perfect, perfect. Got you. Second, there may be some in our audience that aren't familiar with your work. Of course, I am, because we've been colleagues for quite some time. But can you give us like a quick bio? Let's start at the very beginning. Like, where'd you go to high school?
High school, Lake Highland in Orlando, Florida. And not only that, but I went kindergarten all the way through.
Oh, so, Lake Highland. Wow.
So all the way, all the same people I've known since I was 5 years old, which is always an interesting dynamic. But then I went from Orlando to Syracuse. Was there all the way through, and I wanted to be the Cubs play-by-play guy, and I took a play-by-play class at Syracuse and hated it.
Really?
So I decided.
So you were like, Harry Carey, look out, here I come.
Jacoby, that was it. I used to watch the Cubs with my grandma. I was going to be the next Harry Carey. I've got pictures all over my apartment of Harry and I and my grandma. He was trying to hit on her one time at the Cubs convention.
Nice.
When I was like 12, which was interesting, but I've been a diehard Cubs fan. That is what I wanted to do. I went to school, couldn't stand it, and I was like, I still love sports, so what should I do next? And well,
before you continue, I have a quick Harry Carey aside. I worked at Grantland for quite some time. I realized that I just interrupted your bio with my bio, but I worked at Grantland, and while we were there, Harlan Endelman is the producer of this show. We somehow acquired Harry Carey's actual original document of his, I don't know how to say it, drinking diaries is basically how I'm going to say it. But it was how he kept a log of all of it, the way, I think it was for tax purposes, yeah. But he would keep a log of where he went and how much he spent. And just to sort of like, I guess he would, I don't know if he was taxed, I don't know how tax works, but apparently if you buy beers and you're Harry Carey, you can write them off. So he would write off these beers, and we actually saw the document, and Harry Carey, I think your grandma wasn't the only lady that hit on based on these drinking diaries. That's all I have to say about that.
I think you're absolutely right, my friend.
He was prolific in these streets. But continue, you made your way to Chicago and had some drinking diaries of your own, I imagine?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of Budweiser, though, in Harry's drinking diaries, yes. I'm sure. But yeah, after a couple of years out of school, I went to Chicago. I was there for about 10 years. I covered the Bulls, did a bunch of radio work at ESPN 1000 in Chicago. Loved my time there, but hated the winters. Could not stand the snow and was ready for the next challenge. And that challenge was to be in the Bay in Oakland covering the Warriors the last year, which was a soap opera in and of itself. So I've been covering the league now for over a decade. It's been great, and it's only growing from here.
Yeah, well, you kind of blew past some stuff there because you were in Chicago for quite some time, because obviously during the television portion of the program, we're going to get into some Warriors intel. But you know what? Let's start with the Warriors intro. Reggie, hit the Too Hot for TV.
Too Hot for TV.
So let me tell you a little bit about this program. We have the television portion of the program. Every executive in Bristol has two televisions in their office, one on ESPN, one on ESPN2. So when we do the television portion of the program, we have to be more buttoned up and journalist and like actually be responsible. But this is not the television part of the program.
No.
And you spent the last year with the Warriors team. So now is when you can be irresponsible and say the things that you really want to say that you're not supposed to say. Nick, did everyone just know KD was leaving the whole year?
Yes.
Everyone knew, right? Yeah. It was just like, it was not a secret. That's what it felt like watching it.
It was not a secret. I remember back in training camp, Jacoby, Draymond said to me, I know that everybody thinks he's going to New York. We hear all that stuff all the time. We just want to enjoy what we've got going on in the moment. And if this is it, and we come to the end at the end of the season, hopefully we won another title, and we can enjoy that moment and go from there. And so I think everyone understood long before KD and Draymond got into it, long before KD was going at the media at times, that this was probably it. And that only got reinforced all the time in the last couple of months there. But there is no question that internally, coaches, teammates, they all knew that Kevin was probably out, and they've known it since the beginning of the season.
What is the Draymond experience like? We've all heard. Like, we only see the on-court stuff, and we hear about an argument between Steve Kerr, and people sort of like hint at his reputation as sort of being an intense individual. But you're there every day. What is the Draymond experience really like? Remember, the executives are not listening to this.
Jacoby, he is the engine of that whole thing. And there are days when he's in a great mood and he wants to talk and he's playful with everybody. And there are other days where you just don't want to go mess with Draymond because you know that he's not in a really good space. But anybody who has any doubt about the hierarchy of that group, Draymond runs the show. And he has for a while. And Steph is the face, and Steph is the guy that everybody sees on publicly, who's kind of like in charge of things on the floor. But Draymond is the guy that everybody takes their emotional cues from. And I can tell you, having been around the league, there are a lot of characters in the NBA. Draymond is high up there on the list because you never know quite what he's going to say, and you never know quite how everybody else is going to respond around him. But he is fun as hell to cover and to watch play when he's playing at a really high level.
So I've been working at ESPN for 19 years, and I've seen a lot of ex-players turn into media members. And I will say this is, you can kind of tell when they're in the league how good they're going to be in the media. And I've got my eye on Draymond. I'm picking Draymond Green in the media draft. Like, you get drafted from college to the pros, and you also get drafted from the pros to media. And Draymond Green, you can see it, like Jalen Rose. When Jalen Rose was a player, he would never shut up. He had a big personality. He was super fun, but had an edge. Draymond Green is the exact same way. I'm predicting Draymond Green is the next Charles Barkley. What do you think?
Jacoby, he is the number one pick. There's not he even is. Anybody who's close.
He's the
to
Zion.
Me.
He's this the Zion the of this draft.
He is the chosen one.
For the he really
media,
is.
The media he really is. Perspective, this is the guy that the league needs to take Charles at whenever he's ready to roll. Because Draymond is not afraid of saying anything. He's not afraid of anybody. And in that role on TV, when you have to sell it with personality, there is nobody better that I've come across than Draymond Green.
I look forward to, because we all see it. You know, I always say, like, you can tell what they're going to be like in front of the camera when they're in the league. And Draymond is clearly, clearly, clearly meant for this business. I also have my eye on Richard Sherman, too, from football.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's like those two. I feel like we just, like, all we need is, like, Richard Sherman, Draymond, and a host. And, like, you've got the next big
Couldn't
ESPN
just go
show.
At each other the whole time?
Nick. If we say we don't need a host, then you and I have no role in this industry, okay? That's why players only, like, you see how people backlash against players only? It's us.
Right.
We are the people that backlash against players only. Like, any backlash against the players only night comes from media members like myself. I've got burner accounts that just tweet like, man, players only is such a bad idea. I tell my friends to tweet about players only. Players only is the biggest threat to my family since the climate change,
hey,
honestly.
Jacoby, if players only is the biggest threat, we're going to be okay.
Oh, see? There you go. You're doing it. Is that your honest opinion or is that your self-interest? Is that your honest opinion or is that your self-interest? Take a hard look in the mirror and figure that out. Because I can't even tell anymore. Shout out to everybody that works in those players only thing. I actually enjoy it as a gimmick, but I'm just terrified of it as a threat to my livelihood. Let's give the people what they want. Well, you spent the last year covering the Golden State Warriors. I cannot wait. We have a full segment just getting your insight on that year and what the future is for the Warriors. But we start with the latest from our colleague, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Shout out.
All of the dominoes have fallen in a very exciting free agency period in the NBA, but there's still one domino just teetering there. One star who we still feel like is going to change teams, and that is Chris Paul. Well, Woj had an update. Trade talks have stalled with the Thunder, and perhaps he will start the season in an Oklahoma City uniform. My question for you, Mr. Friedel, you've covered the league for years. You know how this works. Is this a real possibility, or is this negotiation through the media?
It's a real possibility because, Jacoby, look at the numbers on that deal. They're horrific. They are terrible. Who wants to take back all that money for a player who is not living up to that contract? The worst thing that could happen in the NBA is that you sign a superstar and they no longer play at a superstar level. So now Oklahoma City has to live with Chris Paul in the moment, hope they can find something to work out in the future. But absolutely, I think there's validity to this because who wants to deal with all that extra space on your cap for a guy who's not going to make that much of a difference anymore?
This doesn't seem to be according to plan for Sam Presti. I mean, if you look at sort of the sequence of this, Paul George asks for a trade. He gets a bunch of picks. He gets off of Paul George. You know, Westbrook, all right, we're going to get some picks back, and we're going to take on Chris Paul. But then we'll flip Chris Paul into some more assets, and then look at us. We've got a young core to build around and a bunch of picks. Maybe we can flip that for another star when we feel like that's the right thing to do. But I think the entire plan was to trade Chris Paul. But it doesn't seem like they now have leverage to trade Chris Paul because these talks have stalled. Like, how do you see this playing out moving forward, even if he does start the season in the uniform?
Sam Presti's going to look in his mirror on a nightly basis during the start of the season, Jacoby, and he's going to go, what the hell was I doing with this deal? I've got all these picks. I don't know what is going to happen in the moment because Chris Paul just doesn't have value anymore. And it's kind of sad. As somebody who watched Chris Paul growing up and really liked his game, Jacoby, watching him the last couple seasons, watching him in that series against the Warriors, he's flopping all over the place. He's just not the same that he once was. And if that was part of the plan to get something back for Chris Paul, even if you have to include a pick, you know, the problem is if you're the Thunder, you have all these picks. The draft has never been more of a crapshoot than it is in the moment. So how are you sure that you're going to land somebody or several assets that's going to get you back over into contention? So I didn't really love the deal when it happened. I know everybody wants to love on Presti and say, oh, he knows exactly what he's doing and he's going to make it work. I don't see it with this Paul deal because Paul is not close to the player that he once was.
Well, I also think there's another Paul deal that perhaps he shouldn't have made, and that's the Paul George deal. Like, Paul George walks into his office and says, look, I don't want to play on the team. And the narrative is, well, they don't want to have an unhappy Paul George in the locker room, on the roster. That's going to be bad for business, bad for the team moving forward. But he's still got 3 years left. Do you think Presti considered, you know what? I'm not going to acquiesce to this trade request. I'm going to bring him into training camp. I'm going to keep Westbrook. I'm going to basically keep the same team we had last year. We won't have to deal with the Warriors in the West, and maybe we can make something happen. Do you think that was a real consideration, or do you think once Paul made a trade request, he was going to trade him?
Here's the problem. The Thunder aren't as good as everybody hoped they'd be. And so if you're Presti and you know that, that's when you kind of look at your staff and you go, all right, let's just hit the button now. And I'm with you. Paul George, when he's healthy, he is an unbelievable player still. And you know he's going to feel like he's reinvigorated in Los Angeles. But the problem with the Thunder was that pairing, Paul George and Russ, that everybody thought was going to push in the West and potentially give the Warriors a little bit of a run, can't even get out of the first round. And that team badly needs a hard reset. The problem is when you acquire a deal like Chris Paul and nobody around the league wants to pay that kind of money, you're just kind of stuck in place. You're waiting to see what happens next. And the Thunder, who have been on the precipice, it seems, of title contention for years and years, and they've always made moves to get them closer, they are nowhere near that. And now they're like so much of the rest of the NBA, and they've got to start over and feel like they have some kind of chance of resetting and getting back to a level that we're used to seeing them.
Well, there's two things I like about this. Number one, Chris Paul generally ornery already, but if he's forced to play with a young rebuilding Thunder team, I can just not wait for the rage of Chris Paul playing basketball. And two, the longer this holds out, the more we get to talk about it, it's good for business. You know what I mean? Let's stretch out these news stories. Let's keep these stars on the trading block as long as we can through the summer for the media contingency. All right, moving on. Clutch Sports always gives us something to talk about. Always in the news. As of course you know, Clutch Sports is operated by Rich Paul. Rich Paul is a confidant of LeBron. Clutch Sports has been adding and losing a couple of clients all summer long. But the latest is that United Talent Agency, UTA, big, huge agency in the entertainment world is now trying to get more into the sports world. They have bought a stake into Clutch Sports, and they have named Rich Paul as sort of the leader of their sports department. This is a huge agency buying up Clutch Sports. What does that tell you about Clutch Sports, UTA, and Rich Paul's future?
Jacoby, what it tells me is that LeBron has even more sway than we ever would have thought a decade and a half ago when he came into the league. This is all LeBron. I mean, LeBron has given everybody around him a seat at the table, and Rich Paul deserves all the credit for building his career off of more than just LeBron. When you look at his client list, he has carved out a name for himself. That's understandable, but to me, the reason all this happened is because you have the power of LeBron, and it's another example of just how much he has changed the league and everything else around him. So I think this is a smart move. Rich Paul has made himself into a brand name in that lane of the industry, but this always, always goes back to LeBron and shows just how much clout he has all over the place.
So I'm going to ask you a question, admittedly knowing that you don't know the answer. I'm going to put you in speculation zone. But one thing I was curious, because I read a lot about this, because I've been following Rich Paul. I really love what they're doing. I love how LeBron has empowered the people around him. I just love everything about it. But here's the question. UTA bought stake in Clutch Sports. But how much? Is it a 10% thing where it's like a gesture and they're hiring Rich Paul? Or is it like a majority stake and UTA now owns Clutch Sports? What would be your speculation there?
I would say 10%, but don't we all live in speculation zone?
Yes, exactly.
About all
aspects of my life are constantly in speculation zone.
Everybody's to be trying fair. To figure it all out.
Kawhi Leonard, where's he going? Well, he's definitely going to the Lakers. Speculation zone.
So yeah, my guess would be smaller, but who knows? I mean, the amount of money that's pouring in now and the amount of money that they can make in the future, Jacoby, anything is possible. Anything. And when it comes to LeBron James, the money that guy has earned off the floor is so astronomical and only going to grow over time that whatever Rich has gotten himself into, it's the smart play and it will only continue to grow over the years.
Absolutely. And I look forward to hearing about the drama on the film set of Space Jam 2. Somebody tells me more is going to come out about that. But we move on, going to the NFL and more speculation zone. The speculation now is Melvin Gordon and his relationship with the Chargers. We all know that he's sort of said he's going to hold out until he gets a new deal, and he spoke with ESPN about that. Let's listen to star running back Melvin Gordon.
Are you prepared to sit out the season?
I'm prepared to do what I got to do, man. Yeah. So, like I said, I hope it don't come to that, because we can make this run, and I want to do it for my teammates, Phil, a couple old heads that's in there, and really for the organization to be one of the first. The guys on the team to bring the organization to Super Bowl, but we need to make something happen.
Well, he says he's doing it for his teammates, he's doing it for the organization, but he's kind of doing it for himself as well. If you were one of his teammates, if you were on the Chargers, knowing how important he is to the success of the team, would you support him in his holdout against the organization?
Hell yeah, get that money. I mean, we have seen this so many times before, whether it's the NBA, the NFL, like, guys want other guys to get paid. And Jacoby, if you're on the Chargers and you know what Melvin Gordon represents and what he has accomplished, you want him to get all his money. That is the look of a guy who knows that eventually he's going to get all his money and he's going to get paid.
I think before you should get a really good scoop about the future of the Warriors, and you should hold out until you drop it. I think that's a strategy. If I was your agent, that's what I'd tell you to
me,
do.
Then it's
just
over.
Like, you
if
know whether
or
not they're
going to
pay
gone.
Draymond the max? You know whether or not they're going to pay Draymond? Just be like, I do know, and I'll tell you, but first, let's renegotiate my deal. Now it is time for Soft Move for Bossman. Friend of Jalen and Jacoby and a colleague and friend of ours, Mina Kimes, wrote an excellent feature about Baker Mayfield. And there's a lot of great details about his role in the Browns and where his head is at and all of that. One of my favorite little details was the origin story of his him and now fiance. They met in 2017. They're engaged now. But one of the ways that he got with her and got her attention would he would routinely follow and unfollow her on social media just to ping, just to stay at the top, to stay in her area. Following and unfollowing someone that you have a crush on social media to get their attention, soft move or boss move?
That's a soft move. You've got to stick with it all the way. I understand that it worked out for Baker in the end, but Jacoby Baker is also worth millions and millions of dollars, and it's a little different in that regard. If you really like a girl and you want to get her attention, there are other ways than doing it on social media. Stick with it and see what happens.
I think I agree with you. I want to go the other way because that's what you're supposed to do in sports television. But this is a soft move. Like, following and unfollowing is a very passive way to get someone's attention. Do you know what's another way to get their attention? Talk to them, ask them questions, buy them some flowers. You know, that's probably the best way to get someone's attention if you're interested in them romantically.
Yep.
Nick, there's been so many teams that have completely changed over this summer, and one of those teams is the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics introduced Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter yesterday, and Kemba Walker said this about his new team in the playoffs.
I'm looking forward to getting back to the playoffs. Like, I've only been there twice, and the two times I've been, it's like the best time I ever had playing basketball. Like, you just play at the highest level. Guys are just playing with so much intensity and passion and just energy, and guys are just giving it everything they got, you know what I mean, for 48 minutes, and that's what I want to be a part of. So yeah, I'm itching to get to the playoffs.
Can I translate that for you, Mr. Friedel?
You got it.
He's not saying I'm itching to go to the playoffs. He's saying I'm itching to go to the playoffs with a team that actually has a chance to win a series. Do you agree?
Absolutely, I agree. But the problem here is the Boston Celtics aren't about the playoffs. The Boston Celtics are about hanging banners and winning titles. So while I think that the Celtics have improved and Kemba can be excited about going to the playoffs, the end game doesn't change for this group. They're a solid team. I just don't think they're good enough to win a title. And when you're in Boston, after all the success that they've had over time, that's the measure of what everything else goes by.
When I look at the Celtics roster, I see a great front court. I see a couple good wings. A great back court and a couple good wings, but I'm a little concerned about their front court. Do you think they will tweak the roster around the trade deadline to get some help with the bigs?
They should, but you know who left who is really going to make the difference? A guy named Al Horford, and he's now in Philadelphia. Jacoby, I don't think everybody else understands just how massive his presence or the lack thereof is going to be for this group, because not only was he the veteran in the locker room that everybody listened to, but he's the guy who everybody could place in any different situation and feel comfortable that he could take care of it defensively. So he was giving you plenty offensively. Defensively, he was always there. He was stable. This group does not have that guy. So maybe Danny Ainge can make another move, but no move is going to be better than the guy you just saw walk away.
I think that's a really good point. Like, I think I've watched a lot of Celtics games. I grew up in Massachusetts. Al Horford meant a lot more to that team than people realize, but on both sides of the floor. And that's one of the reasons I think the 76ers are going to be excellent this year. But that is not what we're discussing at the moment. We are talking about the Celtics and their bigs and how they need help in the front court. And perhaps the help will come in the form of a gigantic man named Taco Fall. We saw him at Summer League. He was to call him a project is even a stretch, but he looked pretty good at times. He's obviously gigantic. He can dunk without leaving his feet. Danny Ainge said that there's a high priority for him to really develop into a player. Nick, do you think Taco Fall has a future in a Celtics uniform next season?
Hell yeah.
Yes.
UCF in the building, Jacoby.
Yes.
This is my guy from Orlando. I think he has a legit chance to do something. And when you're that tall and you can move a little bit and you're going to get some NBA training and feel a little bit more athletic on the floor, you have the opportunity to do something. So Taco has the chance now. And I can tell you, having just gotten back from Vegas last week, anytime this guy touched the ball, anytime he went to the bench fans booed, anytime he did anything, everybody was going nuts. So he's really the new Scal for the Celtics. He is the guy that everybody else will get rallied around and hyped up about anytime he is able to do anything on the floor. But truly, I think he could help them in some small capacity to start next season.
Yeah, I do not think that he's going to be Anthony Davis. But can he come in and sort of like get a couple blocks and a couple buckets and play 10 minutes? Like, yeah, he can. And I think that the Celtics, they say it's a high priority to develop him into a player. Like, He's pretty developed. We know who he is. We know what he can and can't do. You put him in a position to succeed. He's not going to be a starting center, but he could take the 14th spot on the roster, get some minutes, and then maybe a few years down the road, he's kind of like a Sean Bradley type. I mean, do you think that there's a long NBA career ahead of your guy, Taco Fall?
I think he has a chance, and you put him in the right system, and I think that's crucial. If you're in Boston and you have Brad Stevens and you know he knows where to place different guys, that's the key for any guy like Taco, who very clearly has limitations, but he can help in certain areas. And when you're a team that needs a front court help like the Celtics do in the moment, you try anything and see if it really works. And if you're Taco, you have that chance, and you hope that Danny Ainge will sign off on it.
Well, just in case anyone watching this has forgotten exactly how gigantic of a human being Taco Fall is, we've got video of him riding an amusement ride. I do not need to explain to you which one is Taco, because as you will see when this thing goes up, he's a very large man. Look at his legs in comparison to everybody else's.
Oh,
those
man.
Are also basketball players, I want to remind you. He's not with children. His legs just stick out so much further than everyone else's. My question for you is this. If you were Taco Fall, would you go on an amusement ride that was built for regular-sized humans?
Absolutely, because you have to be like everybody else. And Taco's used to be in the center of attention, but Jacoby, when you've lived that life, you want to fit in with all the rest of your teammates and all the rest of the fans and everybody else around you. So, yes, you go on that ride, you watch your head maybe a little bit, but you have fun when you can.
Well, I'm wishing the best for Taco Fall. He is a fan favorite already and has not played a single minute in the NBA. Well, they did have Kemba Walker, but a sneaky signing for the Celtics is a player that I have always loved, Enes Kanter. Don't ask me why I love Enes Kanter. I know that he has limited defensive prowess, but I just think that he's got a really good touch and hands around the basket and is great on offense. And Enes Kanter sort of reminded us all who he's replacing on the Celtics. One of the players that they lost, Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving wore number 11 and said he wanted to be the last to wear number 11, and Enes Kanter was not lost on him. Let's listen to him.
Well, it was my old jersey number, by the way, number 11. And I want to be the reason that no one else will. I had to say it.
Okay. It was his old number, but it wasn't the only number that he wore in the NBA. Do you think he picked number 11 just for the joke?
Absolutely. This is a guy who loves... He is the NBA's biggest troll, Jacoby. This guy loves all the crap that he stirs up, and then he kind of looks back and goes, oh, did I do that? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. It's like the Urkel. I mean, like, I can't believe that this guy tries to pull all this stuff off and to go, oh, I was just talking a little bit. Kanter knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly the point he's trying to get across, and that's why so many guys in the league are ready to knock him out at times when they see him on the floor.
So, Nick, I talk to a lot of people that pay very close attention to the NBA just like you do. And whenever I bring up my love for Kanter, and whenever I say that I believe that he could be a real contributing starting big in the league, I get laughed out of the room. Will you ride with me on this one, please?
No. No.
Every single person. Maybe I think I'm wrong. I think I'm wrong on this.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I'm wrong on this.
He's a nice quote. And he has some solid minutes. He showed in the Portland series with them a couple times. Okay, he's got some heart. This is not a guy that you want to trust defensively. This is not a guy who's going to be consistently what you need. He's a okay player, and he's developed a following for being a troll. But kudos to him, because everybody's got to find their role somewhere.
Kanter, I still believe in you. I love your game. I think that you're going to prove everybody else wrong. And me and you are going to have the last laugh like Kawhi Leonard. The Jalen and Jacoby podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Nick, you spent last season embedded with the Warriors, covering the Warriors like no one else could. So now, I'm going to make sure that you give our audience some intel on that season and the transitions that they're going through. And I want you to say something into that microphone that you're going to regret. That is my job for this segment. Are you ready?
That's the role that Jalen always plays, right? I'm ready to roll.
Exactly. Exactly. Jalen always says something, but he doesn't regret it. I do. First up, they lost Kevin Durant and some other key pieces, but they did bring in all-star D'Angelo Russell. Bob Myers said into microphones, we plan on keeping D'Angelo Russell. We did not trade him to move him. That is not the plan. Nick, that's really the plan, though, isn't it?
That's the plan. That's okay. The plan. If we're okay. Being real honest here, Mr. Jacoby, they didn't want to lose KD for nothing. And when mm-hmm. you sign D'Angelo Russell to a max, you hope that he can help bridge the gap while Klay Thompson's out. But there is no question that if he doesn't come out and score 25 and really fit in quickly with Steph and Draymond, they're going to look to move him in the future, and they're going to look to bring back some other guys who can help them. So Bob was just protecting a guy who hasn't even played a game for the Warriors yet. I understand the PR play, but the reality is that all along, Russell was a guy that they brought in so they didn't lose KD and felt like he just walked away. They have something now as an asset and potentially can flip him down the line.
Okay. We all kind of know that. And if I was Bob Myers, I would say the exact same thing. No shots at him whatsoever. I would say literally the exact same thing. But the next question is this. All right, if they are going to trade him, you know, they'll give him some time. They'll feature him. They'll make sure everybody knows he's a great player, still an all-star caliber player. They got a pretty solidified backcourt for the next few years. What type of player do you think they would trade him for?
I don't even think they're sure right now.
Okay, I like the answer. I like the answer.
Truly, they're trying to figure that out as we speak. The fit with Steph and Klay and Russell, that remains to be seen in a major way, because Steph and Klay are going to the Hall of Fame and they know exactly what they do for each other. But as far as that goes, Jacoby, you would think a big man who can score, yes. But those aren't easy to come by either. So I'm not sure what the answer is, but I am confident in knowing that they don't know what the answer is either in the moment.
That's fair. So if they do bring in a big man who can score, exactly who, let's not even get into that. That would be a little bit somebody on Draymond Green's corner. Now, Draymond Green has obviously played a key role. He does so much defensively for them and offensively for them. He plays in the locker room. You've been there. You know the impact that Draymond has in this organization. However, this is now a contract year for Draymond. And, of course, Klay being hurt is awful for the franchise. KD leaving is bad for the franchise. But it's low-key good for Draymond Green. Draymond Green is going to produce this year in a way that we haven't seen him produce in the last 2 or 3 years while KD's been on the team. If Draymond Green has the kind of year that I expect him to, high scoring, high assists, high rebounds, triple doubles, he's going to put himself in a position to say, I'm a max player. Do you think the Warriors will then pay him like a max player?
I do. Joe Lacob, okay. The owner, is a huge fan of Draymond Green. He has helped create the culture internally for that whole group. But Jacoby, this right here is the biggest story that the Warriors have moving forward. And it's flown mostly under the radar at this point, because Draymond wants all the money. And I don't blame him for that at all. And all those guys in that locker room, they know it's a contract year. They know what is on the line for him this season. And they've got to figure out as an organization how they're going to load manage potentially Draymond, how they're going to figure out how to put him in the right places to succeed, knowing that this year they really don't have that great of a chance to go and win a title and go to their sixth straight final. So I don't know exactly how that's going to fall out over time. What I do know is that Draymond is going to get all his money if he plays like he did during the postseason last year. And if it doesn't come from the Warriors, it's going to come from somewhere else.
See, I expect to see 2015-16 Draymond, where he sets the pick and everybody crashes to Steph and he gets the ball 16 feet from the basket and starts to operate and throws lobs and kicks it out to shooters, or just scores himself. I really have high expectations for Draymond Green this year. And I think we're going to see him sort of operate the offense in a way that we haven't seen him do for the past 3 years. Do you think that that'll be the case?
Yes. And on top of the money, this is the other key with Draymond. There is nothing that motivates this guy more than feeling like he and the rest of his team are disrespected. And going into this year, which I feel like is a gap year for the Warriors, Jacoby, Draymond is going to love the feeling that, oh, yes, you guys said we weren't good enough. You guys said we couldn't, yes, make it happen. These guys know how to win. Draymond is the leader of that core group, and he's going to find a way to play at his very, very best. There's so much riding on the line for him, and this is a team always that feels like it can play at a different level when everybody else is doubting them.
So you do expect the Warriors to pay Draymond Green a max contract at the end of this season?
Yeah. Yeah. In the end.
Max deal.
When all is said and done, if he plays at that same level, and this is something else to point out, he lost a bunch of weight last year, and he was looking and feeling great at the end of that playoff run. If he stays in the same shape, if he elevates his leadership, if he becomes the guy that Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and the rest of that ownership group always felt like he could be, he will get his money from the Warriors, because they know if they don't pay him, there's going to be a line of teams in a weak free agent class a summer from now that will do just that.
Yep. Exactly. A lot of things are breaking right for Draymond Green. I look forward to him performing this year. Now, I have a very quick question. You were with the Warriors all season long. Did they know all season that Kevin Durant was leaving? Be honest.
Yes. All year.
There was no question about it.
They knew for a long time. I think there was always hope that if they went to the finals one more time and they won it again and Kevin was the finals MVP for the third straight year, that they could say, do you really want to leave? Do you really want to leave what you have helped us build in the last couple seasons? But Jacoby, there is no question. From the moment training camp opened, when you talk to players, when you talk to coaches, they felt like Kevin was probably gone, and that only intensified in the last few months. When you talk to all these guys that are around him day to day, that you would think have the best read on him as a person, as a player, they didn't. And the only thing they felt for sure on was that he was probably gone at season's end. And I think it stunned everybody, even in that Warriors locker room, that it wasn't the Knicks. Because all along it was like, he's going to the Knicks, he's going to the Knicks. And then it was like, the Nets? But all along, they felt like that was it.
Well, we appreciate your honesty there. Now, obviously, Kevin Durant's gone, but they've also lost Andre Iguodala, stalwart, and Livingston, someone who's, you know, been with them for such a long time and been a part of this group. People say, like, Quinn Cook are gone as well. How do all of these changes, and Klay's injured, affect the Warriors' big three of Klay, Steph, and Draymond?
This is what's crucial to me with the Warriors now and moving forward, because all of a sudden, the leadership roles are on Steph and Draymond and Klay when he's healthy. Jacoby, they didn't have to worry about that as much the last few seasons because you're leaning on the Livingstons and Iguodalas and David West before them. Now, Steph and Klay and Draymond, they not only have to produce at a high level as stars, but they have to be a role model for all these younger kids at the back end of the roster. It's a challenge that they're ready for, but it's an adjustment that they're going to have to go through and figure it out over time, because this is a group that always had those solid guys that everybody could talk to and everybody could confide in. Now all of a sudden, your stars, who have led you to all these titles, they have to take on that responsibility as well. Steve Kerr is going to prepare him for it, but it is something to watch for because it's a total shift in the dynamic of how this organization was built over the last five seasons.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of questions about this Warriors team, and you sort of know this team as well as anybody. What is the biggest concern for the Warriors heading into this season?
How in the world are they going to make Russell fit inside the rest of that group? The reports early are good. He's matured. He's come out of his Lakers days. He's a better player and a better guy inside the room than he was. But how does that all flow on the basketball floor? Because he is used to playing one style, the pick and pop usually, and the Warriors are used to running up and down the floor in Steve Kerr's system. So I think there is a lot of pressure internally on making him feel comfortable early on, making him feel like he's a huge part of the offense. And if you're the Warriors, not only does that help you in the short term because you need him to win games, but it goes back to what we've been saying all along. This is a guy who potentially you're going to flip, and you need to make him look as attractive as he possibly can be so the teams around the league say, okay, not only is this a player who could possibly help us, but he's a max deal guy who's going to continue to get better at age 23. So that's the question for the Warriors, not are they going to win a title? Because I don't think that can happen even if Klay comes back and he's playing all right. They need to figure out exactly what Russell can give them in the moment and hope he can continue to get better.
I think you hit the nail on the head there because it's a really interesting dynamic. We both think that eventually they will trade D'Angelo Russell. So they try to fit him into the offense, but they also want to feature him for the rest of the league because if he doesn't really fit into the offense, they still have to give him opportunities to show that he can still do what he did last year with the Nets. It'll be something that we'll keep a close eye on throughout the season. Well, not everything in the world of sports and pop culture is worth discussing. So we have a segment called Keep It Moving.
Keep it moving, you know we keep it moving.
This is how this works. If you want to discuss the topic that I propose, you say hit the brakes. If you don't, me, you, and Method Man jump in the minivan and keep it moving. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Caesar's Palace has released the MVP odds for the next NBA season. Keep it moving or hit the brakes?
Hit the brakes.
Caesar's Palace says that Giannis Antetokounmpo is the favorite with plus 300 to win next year's MVP award. Nick, I don't think he's going to win. Who do you have as the MVP next year?
I'm taking James Harden. Nobody wants that award more. I think the odds are okay. He is going to want to score 50 a game, especially now with Russ. So I'm going with Harden. Who are you taking?
So here's my thing. There's a lot of duos around the league right now. And we saw, as you saw when you covered the Warriors, the duos tend to cancel each other out in the MVP race. Giannis won, Harden won when he was, I'm not going to say alone, but when he didn't have as much scoring help as he did. I've got my eye on somebody that you covered.
Steph Curry.
Last time Steph Curry didn't have KD on the team, he was the unanimous MVP, if I'm not mistaken. And now he is going to be a lot of pressure on him to carry the offensive load. I think Steph Curry is going to break his own three-point record. Steph Curry is going to rain down on the NBA like he did before KD got there. And just because I like to hedge my bets, Jokic is also on my list. I think they're going to run the offense through Jokic. He's going to have triple-double after triple-double. And this might be a little bit of a coming out party. What do you think about those two picks?
No, Jokic, I love Jacoby because the narrative is so crucial with the MVP. That's a good pick, but we need to massively hit the brakes on Steph because the Warriors are going to load manage the heck out of him. I know he wants to be out there and play, but they are going to be very, very cautious with what they have him do on a nightly basis, how many minutes he plays. He'll be motivated to show everybody that he can still play without Kevin at an extremely high level, but I do not think that he's going to be playing enough for as many minutes as an MVP would need to go and win the whole thing next season.
You know what? You make a really good point. I'm going to say Jokic next time only when we do that.
There you go.
Again.
There you go.
All right, coming up next, the Knicks didn't even want this superstar. Keep it moving or hit the brakes.
Anytime I hear Knicks and superstar, I already think that they have no chance. So let's keep it moving.
All right, fair point.
We keep it moving. We keep it moving.
Thank you, Method Man. Shout out. Kyrie has already made an impact on his new teammates. Keep it moving or hit the brakes?
What? I want to hit the brakes just because I want to hear what comes next.
Well, we all know that Kyrie Irving has a unique worldview, and I mean that quite literally. Well, it seems like some of his philosophy has already rubbed off on one of his new teammates, Spencer Dinwiddie. Let's check out his Twitter. It's not about the truth. It's about what you believe. Nick, did Kyrie hack his account? What happened to Spencer here?
Jacoby, if he did, that's a good sign for the Nets already. Because I think he had alienated himself in most of that Celtics locker room. So if Dinwiddie has to send out some cryptic tweets, I take that as a good sign for Sean Marks and the rest of that Nets staff that maybe Kyrie's having an early impact even closer than what they thought.
A rapper was working out with famed NBA trainer Chris Brickley. Keep it moving or hit the brakes?
I have no desire to even find out any part of any of rapper and trainer. Please keep it moving.
We keep it moving. We keep it moving.
I have Cubs news. Keep it moving or hit the brakes?
We know I'm hitting the brakes on that one as a diehard Cubs fan.
Huge Cubs fan, Nick Friedel. Congratulations. After 14 tries, Yu Darvish won his first game at Wrigley. After 14 tries. Is this encouraging or discouraging as a Cubs fan?
I just want to put my head in my hands because I cannot believe that you just had to read that whole stat about Darvish. Look at all those people going, is this really happening right now?
Yeah.
Is this guy really doing this?
It's like, I guess I'm happy, I guess. It's a bittersweet moment for Cubs fans, I can imagine.
Well, anything related to Darvish usually is. So anytime he can win a game, no matter where it is, you take that as an encouraging sign. But when you're paying that much money and a guy's a year and a half into his deal and he's finally winning at Wrigley, Theo, I love you, but that Darvish thing, that's going to hurt down the line unless he keeps playing like this and pitching like this. So it's good in the moment. Cubs fans always need a little extra hope. But yikes, that whole year and a half has just been brutal. I hope this is a sign of what's coming down the line.
I have two quick questions. I want you to answer them in succession. Number one, why do you think it's been so hard for Darvish to win at Wrigley? Number two, what's the most beers you've ever drank at a Cubs game?
Number two, we'll start there because it wasn't at Wrigley. It was in...
Around the Wrigleyville area.
The rooftops area. And I lost count after about 10. And, you know, then we went to some other establishments and had a good rest of the night. But as far as Darvish is concerned, man, when you live up to that deal and you sign for 100 plus million in Wrigley Field in Chicago and you're really bad to start, it eats away at you. And he's not the first guy who struggled with a massive contract in that city. But when you're going to a new environment and you don't produce after a guy like Jake Arrieta, who dominated for them for several years and helped them win a World Series, you have even more pressure internally on yourself. He didn't handle it well. I hope that he's through it now. But having watched him the last year and a half, Jacoby, I am still extraordinarily skeptical that this is exactly who we're going to see from here on out.
Next, a man was fired. And perhaps Tupac was involved. Keep it moving or hit the brakes?
Hit the brakes.
Iowa's director of the Department of Human Services, John Foxhoven, was a huge Tupac fan. He would regale his employees with Tupac lyrics. He would send multiple emails to 4,000 people citing the philosophies of Tupac. He once had a party in the office in which every cookie had a Thug Life tattoo style written on it. And he was relieved of his duties as the director of the Department of Human Services. And he says it has nothing to do with Tupac. Do you think his love of Tupac got him fired from his job?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In Iowa, loving Tupac. I mean, I don't know, Jacoby. You tell me. What do you think?
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, they're not going to say it. It's not going to be in the paperwork, but it definitely had something to do with it. When you throw an office party in Iowa and the cookies have Thug Life written on them, it's going to raise some eyebrows. It's going to raise some eyebrows. That's all I have to say about that.
Tupac's not playing that high in Des Moines.
No, he's not. Not big in Des Moines. He never even toured in Des Moines. They would skip it. I do love Iowa, though. I've had some great times there.
We keep it moving.
Nick, we have some new information about that max contract that Ben Simmons signed. Our guy Bobby Marks always has the latest with the contract details. Let's take a look at what he gave us. He said there's a complete breakdown of the contract. These are the different incentives that he has to hit. And again, there's a $34 million swing here if he makes all NBA. So let me just remind our audience who the all-NBA guards are in this league. James Harden, Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Kemba Walker. Is there any spot for Ben Simmons to sneak onto an all-NBA team next season?
Yes. And here's what he's going to do, Mr. Yes. Jacoby. He's
like
going to take Bobby's tweet, and he's going to cut it out. And he's going to copy it about 1,000 times. And he's going to paste it all over that gym. And he's just going to keep telling himself, learn how to shoot. Learn how to shoot. Learn how to shoot. Learn how to shoot. Because every other part is right where it needs to be. If this kid can learn how to shoot, he's going to get all kinds of extra money. And if ever there was motivation to prove everybody wrong about where he's at, he's going to get it in the form of even more cash in that deal. So there is no doubt, if he can develop his game and get to a point where he's more comfortable from the outside, everything else will fall into place for him and for the Sixers.
So Ben Simmons is effectively the point guard of the 76ers. For all intents and purposes, he's the point guard. But they never really had someone to guard the opposing point guard. But now they have Josh Richardson. And I'm a huge Al Horford fan as well. They added him. I had the 76ers as winning the Eastern Conference, and I know you do too. We're on the same boat, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be the Sixers coming out of the East if they stay healthy. And Jacoby, not only that, Joel Embiid, this is your time to shine, baby. This is the moment where you can be the MVP. The process can be the MVP if he can stay healthy on the floor, lose some weight, get in shape, and it'll all come together in Philly.
Okay. Listen, I want to support you here, but isn't there a thing that Joel Embiid won't play enough games, whether it's injuries or load management or whatever, where he doesn't get on the floor enough to really be considered as the MVP?
He'll be dominant enough in the games he's playing on a team that is going to win with the narrative built in that he's the guy and he's the ready-made star. I think it can all fall into place for him.
I think that's great news for Joel Embiid, but my concern about his MVP candidacy is he might miss some games for injury. You know, they like to load manage him, not too many back-to-backs. I'm not sure that he will be considered an MVP because of the amount of games he plays. What do you think about that?
Jacoby, he's going to be so dominant in the games that he does play that it's not going to matter. The process is ready. The narrative is there. Philly's going to win, and Embiid can do it.
I hate to say this. I think Philly's going to win the East, too. All right, Nick Friedel here. You covered the Warriors last year, and we have a segment on the show called Take Us Behind the Curtain where Jalen tells us what it's really like to be in an NBA locker room. I want you to take us behind the curtain and tell us what it's really like to be in an NBA locker room, but just not as a player. You know what I mean? So, like, give us the full game day routine. There's a game at Oracle. What time do you get there? What do you do? Who do you talk to? How long do you wait to talk to the players? Give us, like, a minute-by-minute recounting of the experience in an NBA locker room. But instead of as a player like Jalen, as a reporter like you.
All right, it's like 10:30. You're going into shoot around at the Warriors practice facility in the morning. You're talking to Steve Kerr. You're talking to a couple players. You're getting a read on what they potentially think is going to happen that night. Now, in between, when you get out 11:30, 12 o'clock, maybe you have to do some radio stuff, some stuff on TV. Maybe you have to write a story or two. But that's your time to maybe get a nap in, have some lunch, and then you're back at Oracle about 4:30. You're trying to walk around the floor. You're seeing what's happening as guys prepare for the game. And that's when you have your best conversations, honestly. When you're off the record, you're just talking to guys casually, and you're seeing what's on their mind. But so officially, about 5:15 or 5:30, Steve Kerr talks, then the opposing coach talks about 15 minutes later. Then you have pregame access, which back in the day, Jacoby, about 10 years ago, that was fantastic because you could just walk around the room and talk to guys about anything you wanted. 10 years later, nobody's really in there. It's maybe the younger guys. In my case with the Warriors, it's Klay Thompson literally reading a newspaper at his locker.
I love that about Klay.
That is genuine. That is not for show. He sits at his locker before every game at Oracle and he reads the newspaper.
What newspaper?
The East Bay Times, and he's got an endorsement deal out of it.
East Bay Times.
The East Bay Times. So Klay is hardcore in whatever he does. And I'd add this quickly. It always cracked me up because Klay kind of did whatever he wanted. And this is way behind the curtain, but it always drove Kevin nuts because Kevin wouldn't talk to the media sometimes. And as we saw last season, there were plenty of times where people were like, why isn't Durant saying whatever he's going to say? And Kevin, in my experience, he's the most accessible star I've ever been around. He loves talking about the game. He loves just talking about basketball. He doesn't like all the other stuff sometimes, but basketball, the guy knows more numbers than anybody I've ever seen. But so he would get upset because Klay'd be sitting there at his locker reading the newspaper, or Klay would decide at the end of a game, you know what, I didn't play very well. I don't want to talk. I don't want to deal with any of this. And Kevin would be like, what would happen if I did that? What would you all say if I just disappeared? And I didn't say anything for a while, but that's Klay having carved out his own image and Kevin having carved out his over time. But so aside from all that, now you're at 6:15. You get out of the locker room. Maybe you talk to some of the other writers or the broadcasters, have a little dinner, but never eat at Oracle. That food was horrible. Food at Oracle was the very worst.
So where would you eat then?
Well, I usually go to In-N-Out about 12:30 or 1 in the morning after the game, but that wasn't good either.
That's always that, yeah, all the nutritionists say that you should probably have fast food after midnight. It's really the new thing.
Like,
we had the Atkins diet, and we had like a low carb thing, and there was like the cayenne pepper lemonade. Now it's In-N-Out after midnight is the best thing for your body.
That's you heard it here first. The best thing to get you in shape is that little In-N-Out boost right after and wash it down maybe with the strawberry shake. You know, you're really feeling good. That's really good. That's the good stuff.
There you go.
But so now we're into the game and it's like 9:30 it ends. You go in and the Warriors for the flaws that they had publicly sometimes with Kevin or what happened during the year, They are the best run PR organization that I have ever dealt with in any sport. And I say that because it is like a machine most nights.
You say that because you have to work with them next year. That's why you say that.
Well, but I'm just telling you, even before I got there, I always felt like the Warriors did it the best. And it's backed
I've
up.
I've heard this. I've heard this from other sources.
It's backed up. It's backed up by the fact that the Pro Basketball Writers Association, they vote on this stuff every year. And the Warriors have won this award like four of the last 5 years. And they win it because in an era where every team is trying to limit access, the Warriors go out of their way to make guys more available. And in the flow of a post-game conversation, it's like a machine. Steve Kerr comes into this press conference room, and he does his 10 minutes with the media. And then here comes Kevin Durant. And then right after Kevin Durant, here comes Clay when he wants to talk and when he's not walking away to go hang out with his dog and go home. But there's DeMarcus Cousins. There's Draymond, who is one of the best quotes that there is in pro sports. And then usually Steph is much later. And he takes his time, but he does always show up and he always talks. So now you're into 10:15 or 10:30 and you've spoken to all the players and the coaches and you start writing your stories. Or in my case, you're writing a story or you've got to go do a segment on TV or do a segment on the radio. But from about 10 in the morning until 12 or 12:30 when you're hitting in and out, that is your day. And I don't think most fans understand. It's not just going to the game and having a beer and open up pizza box. I mean, it is an all-day affair, and that's 82 times a year.
So when does the scrum around the lockers happen? Because when you say they're coming to the press room, when's the locker scrum?
Well, see, and that's the difference with the Warriors and everybody else. The Warriors' home games have a press conference room that I'd say almost every other team doesn't have to deal with because there's not as much attention on them on a regular basis. Most teams, the game ends, the coach comes and talks either in a press conference room or right outside the locker room. And then you've got players that are just sitting at their lockers after they've gotten out of the shower and they do their 5 or 10 minutes of access. Now, depending on who the player is and what kind of mood they're in that day, you're supposed to only be able to wait for, you know, 10, 15 minutes in the locker room, but some of these guys just love hanging out and making everybody wait. Shout out to my old friend Jimmy Butler, who is one of the culprits of that always. But if you get a guy in a good mood, you should only be in that locker room for 20 or 25 minutes after the game. If guys want to mess around a little bit, man, the amount of hours that I've spent in various locker rooms listening to guys BS and make fun of the media and everyone else, that's a lot of time.
Do you think there's a palpable tension between players and the media?
Yes, absolutely.
How does it manifest itself?
That players do not want to go out of their way to say anything anymore. And even when they do talk, they don't want to say anything that's going to rock the boat or make any news because they feel like in so many cases it's being taken out of context. And that's what's happened with the proliferation of websites and people with Twitter and journalists that are looking for that headline. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why, but the answer to your question is 100%. In the time when I started covering the league and I've been around other pro sports too now, most athletes just don't want to deal with the media because they don't want to deal with the potential backlash of whatever their words may be.
One quick question. You were there. There's a narrative around Kevin Durant's returning to the NBA Finals that the media pressured him, the team pressured him, that he wasn't healthy, the workout didn't go well, but he went and played anyway to sort of appease the people. How much of that is reality and how much of that is fiction?
So much of Kevin Jacoby, he wants love. I mean, if I learned anything from Kevin Durant, having been around him from a distance over the years, but being around him day to day this season, he's just human like everybody else. He's trying to figure it out like everybody else, but he is looking for the validation and the fulfillment that he's trying to find in other areas, whether it's social media or otherwise. But to your point, I think there was pressure internally. His teammates, certainly, they watched him work out a few days prior to when he was out there in game five, and they all felt like he could be out there, and he didn't come back initially, and they're going, what's the deal? Why isn't this happening? But if he didn't want to be out there, Kevin wouldn't have gone out there. But as we have this conversation, what sticks in my mind is I watched him in Toronto walk out, and there was a massive ice pack around his Achilles.
Yep,
and that image just sticks with me, because so many times when guys have a calf injury, you see them ice up or get treatment on the calf. And all along with Kevin, that injury always felt like it was a little more than the calf, because that the area that he was, he was taking care of was the Achilles. And the first move, where he put any torque on that thing, every other, when you go back and watch that game, when he came back in Toronto, he was running into shots or he was picking stuff off the dribble.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The first time any torque was on that Achilles.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. You can always follow Nick on social. You can catch him on ESPN all the time. One of our favorites, Nick Friedell. Thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow. Jalen Rose will be back as well. Why is that, KRS?
We're done. We're not done. We're not done. Got to give the people
time. Give people what they want. They're my little guys. I love them.
What it do, baby?
Yeah.